Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is episode 154 of the show. I am Carlos Collazo, joined by Ben Badler as usual, and we are in a new year, the fifth year that we have done this podcast, Ben. We're coming up on our four-year anniversary of the show, but we've put out podcasts in five distinct years as of this episode. So happy new year. How you doing?
Oh, I didn't catch anything for our anniversary, Carlos. I'm sorry.
I didn't either. I guess we're not really a powerhouse co-host duo since we forgot to do that. But I think actually in February is our official, that'll be the fourth year anniversary of the show. I think February 2021, or is that five? February 2021 was our first show. So it's been a few years now.
Yeah, that's good, man. We've got a lot going on in January. People who don't work, just like friends I have outside of baseball who don't work in the game, who ask, oh, like, is this must be like a slow time a year for right. you, right? It's like, no. January is where we get our top 100. We got our top 30s going up. We got January 15th, the international signing period starts. This is like our busiest, one of our busiest months of the year.
Yeah, definitely in terms of like what's going on the site, it's busy. I think for you, Ben, it's probably even more busy than everyone because it's basically like if the draft for me was in January, where it's like this is a huge day for you. And obviously there's a ton of work that goes into January 15th that you've been working on. It feels like you'd never really get a true holiday season because of the timing of Prospect Handbook in December. I get similar questions to people in November, December say, oh, you cover baseball, so you're not doing anything in the winter, right? And for handbook season for me, October to December, that's not true. I feel like I get a little bit more of a breather in early January just because my hands aren't in the international market quite as much as yours or at all. Basically, it's just me talking with you about international players on this podcast is kind of the extent of my specific coverage of it. But I do like January on the draft and the amateur side because it's a lot of like anticipation, looking ahead to the season, planning things we want to do this year, trying to level up our coverage every year. There is some of that like new year refresh, revitalize scheduling stuff that really gets me energized. And we've had a down period of no baseball games that I've been able to see that I'm like really itching to get out there and see games. So it's a fun time. It's a good time to be back on the podcast with you. It's been a few weeks, maybe a little bit less on the actual feed since we did have that Paul Davis interview that went out, which we got some good comments and feedback on that show. So appreciate you guys just letting us know that you like those sorts of interviews.
I guess what they really want on this podcast is less of me and you talking.
Right. Yeah. Maybe the solution is just we should be asking smarter people things about baseball and the audience will be sated. But no, we did get some good comments, good reviews. And I'd just say, if you do listen to the show and you enjoy it and you want to review it, you want to help it get out to more people, leaving a review wherever you listen to the podcast always does help us just push it to more people. It's good for the show. We're trying to kind of slowly improve it, add some things. We're starting to do more mailbag segments to get some more interaction with listeners and just give you guys a little bit more content more frequently. I'd also say just in the sort of housekeeping section here at the beginning of the show, still check out the Prospect Handbook if you guys have not purchased that directly through us. We do have top 30s live on the site now. So if you've been wanting to see like what the full expanded rankings are, those came out a few days ago as we're recording this episode. I believe it's the earliest that we've ever in the history of Baseball America released top 30s. So that's fun. But if you want to get the actual Prospect Handbook in your hands, definitely check that out. I think typically starts shipping around March, if I'm remembering it correctly. But if you order directly through us, you will get a digital PDF the next business day, which I don't know what your preferred reading format has been, but I just love the fact that I can just Command F, search for players, bounce around really quickly because it is a pretty meaty book and accessing it on the computer does make it easy to hop around wherever.
Yeah, definitely. I like having the book still in my hands, just like pick it up and flip through it quick. But having the digital version is a big plus to have too.
There's something cool and just tangible, obviously, about a physical print product in the year 2026, and the fact that we have multiple print products that we continue to push out and that continue to be viable for us, I think is very cool. So,
and a shiny Connor Griffin on the cover.
Yeah, and even like looking forward to the college preview edition of the magazine. We've got some changes coming for how the magazine is going to look in our next issue. I'm excited to get my hands on that. So it's just cool to have in your hand, cool to actually flip open and read through. But yeah, any other housekeeping, any other notes before we hop into some prospect talk today, Ben?
No, just I guess the latest news is Caden McCarthy, who is in the 2027 high school class, high school pitcher from the hotbed state of Vermont, reclassifying to the 2026 class. Sounds like it was a decision that came on pretty quick for him. Just talking to him, he said it basically happened over over winter break last month, and then boom, now he's going to be joining this pretty loaded 2026 high school class that we've been really excited about for years. I think the pitching is really good, and now you add McCarthy, who was the number 15 high school player overall in the 2027 class, and I believe it was the number 5 pitcher overall in that class. Mm-hmm. I think the pitching is pretty good in 2027. Position players are all right, certainly after Dylan Seward, who's pretty special at the top. But yeah, I mean, McCarthy's up to 97, 6 foot right-hander, really athletic, good delivery, throws a lot of strikes, like a ton of movement on his two-seamer, a good changeup. So just adds another arm to a group of high school pitching who, I mean, seeing it myself, I'm very impressed just with the overall quality, both of the top and the depth of arms in the 26 high school draft class. And talking to, you know, scouting directors, other higher ups in organizations who are going to be making decisions on picks, they're pretty excited about this high school pitching class ahead, which is interesting, especially because teams don't really like to draft high school pitching
right
in at least not in the first round anymore.
Yeah, we were talking about this kind of as a staff of our Slack, just thinking through how talented this pitching class is. I think the McCarthy reclassification was a good kind of kickstart to that conversation. It's funny too, because last year Steele Hall reclassified from 2026 into 2025. And we were talking about that class as being a really deep and talented high school shortstop class. Now McCarthy does the same thing a year later into a very deep and strong high school pitching class. But by the way, you're talking about the 2027 class. It sounds like regardless of what class he was in, there were going to be a lot of really good pitchers that he was going to be competing against in a sense. But yeah, we're getting some feedback each year. We do for the last 5 years since 2021, we've done our preseason All-America polling for scouting directors. I think ever since we've done those teams, those have always been voted on by scouting directors. But in recent years, we've added on kind of a draft poll, like basically having scouting directors grade each draft class, like how they're viewing it entering the year. And we're already getting the biggest grades on this high school pitching demographic than we've ever gotten in the 5 year history of us doing those grades. Like we've gotten 80 grade reviews on this high school pitching class. And I think that is I looked ahead of this podcast. We've not gotten a single 80 grade review from a respondent on any of the four major demographics. Those would be high school pitchers and hitters and college hitters and pitchers is kind of how we break it up. We've never gotten a single 80 grade piece of feedback on any of those major demographics at this stage in the class. So I think it's obviously very strong. It's also interesting too, to maybe compare it to some classes that we've had in the past where the high school pitchers ranked respectively maybe seemed a little bit more impressive. And I think part of that is because, like you said, teams don't really like drafting high school pitchers in general. I think they've become more hesitant to push those players to the top of the board. And also, I think there was a period in like 2014 to 2018, 19, where we were probably just a little too hot on our evaluations of high school players in general compared to the college players. And I think we'd gotten some feedback at the time that like we valued high school players a little bit more than the industry did. And so we've kind of, I think course corrected that in a way that is in line with the industry. Again, maybe I'm throwing a lot into this conversation, but I think part of that too is just the fact that there are just fewer spots for high school players to land in pro ball and get multiple years to develop because of the restructuring of the minor league. So there are a lot of reasons why high school pitchers in general have kind of fallen down draft boards as a collective, as a demographic. I'll be curious to see like how many high school pitchers go in the first round this year, because it's a loaded class, but it's also a very good class for hitters, both on the college and high school hitting side. So like if you had this collection of high school pitchers in a draft like last year, where there was just, there are fewer college bats that people were excited about, their draft like 2021 maybe is another one where you could point to, like in another draft class, you're probably looking, you're probably looking at guys like Gio Rojas, Carson Bowman, not being middle of the first round, but like top 10 at this stage. And I think the only reason they're not is because this class is just very good overall. I'm guessing it's going to have some of the biggest grades we've gotten on a class at this stage, again, since that 2021 year where we started asking scouting directors to put quantifiable grades on a draft class.
Yeah. I think the curious is because so this year we had two high school pitchers drafted in the first round. One of them was Seth Hernandez, who goes to the Pirates, one of the best high school pitching prospects who've come around in recent years. And then the other one was a 6'8" left-handed pitcher, Cruz Schoolcraft, who went to the Padres in the back of the first round. So I do think the pitching in this year's class on the high school side is superior to what we saw last year, or certainly in 2024. Mm-hmm. But also, like you said, there's a lot of really good high school hitters. I'm sure there'll be some of these guys who will get paid pretty well in like the comp round, the second round, the third round, some guys who fall into later rounds who are, you know, well over slot type guys. Because I think compared to one of the reasons were, you know, the some of the high school pitchers were ranked higher maybe in previous years is not necessarily that a reflection of where the pitchers are today compared to the pitchers of say 2018 or 2014 or whatever year. Mm-hmm. It's just that the, you know, whether it's us or the industry at large, maybe both, way overvalued high school pitching. I think there's still even an overvaluing of pitching once these guys sign, like whether it's high school pitching, college pitching, international pitching, wherever, like once they're into the minor leagues. I think like historically, if you look at our top 100 prospects list, even in recent years, probably the guys we end up regretting being very high up that list the most tend to be the pitchers. Like if we have a guy ranked in the top 25 prospects in baseball and he's a position player, occasionally they don't work out. Like there's some very prominent busts in that group too, but for the most part those guys are pretty safe and pretty obvious to pick out too. Like it's not because we're all that smart, it's just kind of obvious how good these guys are, and there's a lot less risk with them. Whereas you can have pitchers who, you know, are doing great and even dominating up through AA, AAA, even guys of big league time. And even sometimes those guys end up just flatlining and not being what you expect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So a couple things here too. When comparing this year's class to last year's class only, the difference in college hitters throughout the first round, I think is going to be significant. We didn't have our first college hitter selected last year until the Marlins took Ivar Arquette number 7 overall, and we had only 7 college hitters taken inside the first 30 picks, which is unusually low for any draft class. And I think this year's class, the 2026 group, is just strong, like stronger than average on the college hitting side. Right now we have 15 of the top 30 players in the class. The college hitting demographic are half of the top 30 players. 5 of the top 10 prospects we currently have are college hitters. And that is also a demographic where the number that we typically have preseason is lighter at college hitting than at the time of the draft. I think there are more college hitters move up the board more often than the group moves down the board as players just get opportunities to continue to improve, change their profile. I think they have greater levers to pull with their draft stock. I say that every year. The other thing too is you mentioned the increased risk of pitchers versus hitters and how we tend to regret pitchers in our rankings more than some of the hitters. I went back as part of this conversation and looked at the 2018 class because I think the 2018 draft, I remember as being probably the most deep high school pitching class I think I've covered in my time at BA. And 2018 was the first year where I had a full cycle doing it. But I don't know that there has been a deeper high school pitching class than that group in the last few years. If there's another one that stands out to you, let me know. But just here, like I filtered our list. Here are some of the high school pitching names, and then I'll talk through some of the high school hitter names. And I think it'll kind of like bring home the point you're making about the hit rate. But we had a ton, and in our top 100, just to compare, our top 100 in 2018, we had 25 of the top 100 were high school pitchers. Right now, that's 17 of the top 100, and it feels very deep, but that high school pitching class in 2018 was just so deep. And I think this was also maybe the peak years where we were really stuffing those profiles. But to go through some of the top names, Matthew Liberator, Carter Stewart, Cole Wynn, Kamar Rocker, Ryan Weathers, Ethan Hankins, Mason Denneberg, Grayson Rodriguez. Those are all the pitchers that we had ranked inside the top 30 at the end of the process. And then you still had guys like Adam Klofenstein, Cole Wilcox, JT Ginn actually going inside the top 30, Lenny Torres. Like, how many of those names now are you like, dang, those are really good draft picks? But at the time, we were really excited about them. Like, the talent was really impressive. It was a class that was very lauded for the high school pitching depth. And then you look at some of the top high school hitters in this class. Jared Kelnick, Bryce Terang, Nolan Gorman, Noah Naylor, Connor Scott, Tristan Cassis, Nander DeSantis. I mean, with the exception of a couple names, most of those hitters are big leaguers, either regulars, and some who still have a chance to be like above average regulars. The hit rate of the hitters is definitely more impressive and maybe speaks to how risky just pitching in general can be.
Yeah, and probably nobody heading to Cooperstown from that pitching group, I would say.
Right. Yeah, the class has definitely not aged as well as we thought it could have at the time. And I think maybe it's also just a good reminder that really, no matter what we're talking about for a draft class at the time, you never really know how it's going to pan out. There have been classes that were really critiqued and nitpicked that wind up being way better than expected. And there have been classes that everyone's like, oh, this is super deep. This is really talented. There's going to be a lot of good players. And then everyone kind of just busts and doesn't live up to expectations. So still a long time before we're going to know, really, was this a good draft class? But it certainly looks like it now.
23 high school class is definitely living up to expectations right now, I would say. But yep. Also, I think just on, so you can kind of compare the classes maybe on a relative basis, but also just on an absolute basis, like players look like players today are better than they were 10 years ago. They're better than they were 20 years ago. They're better than they were 30 years ago. Like, it's obvious unless your brain is stuffed somewhere else, but it's guys are just much better today than they were even yeah. 5 years ago, 5 to 10 years ago. You see so much more velocity now. I mean, it's so prevalent everywhere you go. Like, there's tons of guys in this class who can throw 94, 95 miles an hour.
Like, I mean, when you were talking about what Caden McCarthy does up to 97, does it pretty easily and smoothly. It was like that in previous years, that would have been a separator and vaulted him to like the very top tier. And now it's like he's just one of many pitchers who's getting up to velocity that high. And what stood out to me when watching these guys last summer is like, not only is just mid-90s velocity commonplace now, the quality of just your baseline breaking ball for some of these top pitchers is so much better than what it was when I started. I mean, it was very common to have a lot of slurvy in between breaking balls that just like power and bite. And there were so many like mid-80s banger breaking balls. And just the training these days, the access to information, the access to technology, the feedback loops for pitch design, everything is just so much more advanced these days on top of just the natural progression of athletes we get in sports across the board. It was very apparent to me last summer at both East Coast Pro and Area Code games. It's like, man, there's just a factory line of pitchers, one after another, who just throw hard and can snap off a breaking ball.
Yeah, the velocity is pretty obvious to see. There are also, I mean, there are just guys, there's this guy or guys who throw like 97, 98 in this class where I'm like, I don't really... Right. I don't really love this guy. Like, I think he's a reliever. It's a ton of effort. I don't love the strikes. Like, you know, not a top 100 high school player for me. You know, again, in a deep class, but that speaks to the depth when you got guys who can throw, you know, 97, 98 miles an hour. I don't even think it's a top 100 high school player in the class. But players get much better development now in high school than they did 5 to 10 years ago. And certainly before then, you have better coaching, you have more facilities, even remote training where you get more access to better coaching and better information at home. So guys are optimizing or maximizing the stuff and the, kind of the raw ability that they have right now, even in high school before they get into pro ball, because they're working with, they're working around they're working around professional players in these facilities, the guys who are, you know, same guys who are coaching a lot of the pro guys at these independent facilities are making an impact on these guys in high school. Players are just smarter now than they were even 5 to 10 years ago, as much as it like hurts older people to somehow hear that sometimes, but it's true. You just see it, and look, like there's still plenty of guys who are super raw and crude players still, but just the overall talent and the depth of talent, especially on the pitching side, like you can see it. I think this class sticks out more so than the 25 or the 24 high school class. So maybe this just happens to be a great year for high school pitching. Like, I don't think it's going to be like this every year, but the 27 high school arms are pretty good too, especially relative to the, I would say the 27 high school bats. So we're just seeing better pitching than we used to. And I think we're also hopefully, and I think we probably are, just better at analyzing these guys today than we were 5-10 years ago too, just with better access to information, more video, more readily available tools to quantify the pitches that are coming out of these guys' hands and their deliveries and everything else that that goes into the measurables, but also some of the subjective stuff too, to be able to line these guys up and stack them up against each other too.
Yeah. I think Paul mentioned this in our podcast on pitching in our last episode, which again, if you didn't hear it, I would definitely check it out. But our just ability to evaluate pitchers today is so much more granular and like specific than 5 years ago. I mean, doing some of these redrafts we did, over the offseason, we redrafted the 2021 draft and the 2011 draft. And like just the way that we wrote about pitcher stuff in those years is so different than what we'd write about today. Like there was a time where pitchers who had shorter release points and didn't have downhill plane on their fastballs was talked about like blanketly as a pejorative, as a negative. So this like the exact opposite of what teams are going for today, which is these short release, flat approach angle, high ride fastballs, were getting critiqued back then before we knew what VAA was, before we knew what IVB was, before we could track it with precision from all these like tracking technologies. Like short pitchers would be critiqued because they couldn't create enough angle or plane. And I feel like now it's almost a 180 today. Like you're not really looking for pitchers who are getting great downhill plane because hitters have adjusted to that. And a lot of the bat paths for hitters, just naturally are more well equipped to penalize pitchers. It's not saying like if you're a pitcher who gets crazy playing, that can't be effective. It still can, I think, for certain pitchers and pitch types and if you're locating in certain situations. But just the way we talk about amateur pitchers today compared to even like 2018, 2019 is significantly advanced, I think. And then one point that JJ mentioned, and we've kind of been talking about it as well, but he said that the biggest difference for him in how we're thinking about high school pitchers today versus 10 years ago was velocity is now the baseline, not the differentiator. And I'm curious if you think a guy like Savion Sims in this 2026 draft class, 6'8", 205 pounds, has been up to 100 miles per hour, sits regularly in the mid-90s. Like, if he was coming out as a draft prospect in 2010, is he going to be talked about in the same way that Tyler Kolek and Riley Pint, who were similar, just like flame-throwing high school players? And I'm not trying to knock Savion Sims, but I'm more trying to make the point that, like, Savion Sims we have currently ranked outside of the first round. He throws that hard and is such a freak on the mound and has these super long limbs and has, again, a mid-80s slider that looks like it can be a really good pitch. Like, he's a very good pitcher. I mostly am just saying, like, throwing hard now alone is not enough. And I think there have been enough pitchers who simply throw hard but maybe don't do a lot of the other things you want, that it's just more risky today. So I'm curious if you think Savion Sims a decade ago is like a no doubt top five, top 10 player in this class.
I mean, I think there's a lot of pitchers who we have ranked in like the 30 to 70 range who would be first round picks in, you know, 10 years ago, just the high school arms alone. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing too, with this high school class is like, there's all different types of arms, like no matter what your flavor is or what you're looking for, like there's somebody for you. Like as we're trying to figure out, okay, Caden McCarthy, he belongs, you know, we need to put him somewhere now into our 2026 draft rankings. Like where should he go? Let's stack him up relative to these other high school pitchers. All right, well, you got a 6-foot athletic right-handed pitcher who's going to be 17 on draft day, so he's young for the class, up to 97, good movement on his two-seamer, good changeup, you know, still some feel for a knuckle curve that he's throwing. Okay, do you want him? Do you like Savion Sims, who's 6'8", throwing 100 miles an hour with like ultra long arms, looks like he has a chance to be the hardest throwing human being maybe ever, because there's like still more physical upside there. Like he's a total freak of an athlete and arm on the mound. Do you want like the, you know, the easy lefty like Gio Rojas, 6'4", like buttery smooth delivery, who's up to, what is he, up to 97, 98, like Carson Bolamon? I don't even want to call him a pitchability lefty because he does have great, like phenomenal pitchability, but he also is like a strong kid who's up to, you know, fastballs crept up to 96, two ridiculous breaking balls that he can command like as good as anybody I think that I've ever seen, like Logan Schmidt, another lefty, young for the class. Jensen Hirschkorn, like 6'7", like him. Denton Lord, 6'8". Gary Moore, 6'8", or whatever he is now. Like, you know, Cooper Side, Sean Duncan, like all these guys are just, you know, Trey Rangel, who's throwing, you know, again, like you're, I don't know, smaller, like 6'1", but like ultra fast arms, spinning 3,000 plus RPM, breaking balls. Like, there's just so many different types of arms where like I could see, I don't know, I don't want to say first round, because again, we just had two high school pitchers go in the first round last year, and there's
that's probably a really easier to say like how many are going to get first round equivalent money regardless of where they're taken,
or I got guys who, you know, have that kind of upside at least to go in the first round, guys who I really like. Although like all those guys I just named are really, really good and teams would be pumped to have, and there's just so many of them this year.
Yeah, really is overflowing with talent. I'll be very curious to see if it'll be a situation where we do just see a little bit more, a fewer a few more names inside the first round. How many of these guys are going to get to campus, college? Like, there have been a lot of these players who've just said, you know, like, if I'm not going to be one of the first two, three high school pitchers off the board, or if I'm not getting, like, if I think I've got the talent stuff to be the top pitcher of this class and I'm not going to get it this year, I'll go bet on myself, go to college, do it in the ACC, the SEC, one of these big power conferences out west, Oregon State, UCLA, wherever it is. I mean, clearly, if you're going to go through the college process and show that you can start for 2-3 years, avoid injury, continue to improve as a pitcher, it's going to pay off, because teams are just going to be much more excited about getting a college arm with all that same stuff that just has more track record.
Look at the college arms this year. You could say the same thing about Liam Peterson at Florida when he was in high school. Cam Flukey, you know, kind of more of a later riser, but like, he was definitely a prominent name.
Peterson was a top 100 high school guy for us. And
Tegan Coons at Tennessee, he's going to be first two rounds pick. I love him and loved him in high school. Like him just as much right now. Kind of the same boat. So yeah, college baseball, I mean, these guys aren't all going to sign. Like, we talk teams, these guys are going to have, understandably, in a lot of these cases, very high price tags to sign. And there's only so much money teams have in their bonus pools, and a lot of them are going to put them into the bats first still.
What do you think of the gap between Seth Hernandez and the top tier arms in this class right now? Because I do think Seth Hernandez, for me, is in sort of that elite high school pitching tier, like the best high school arms I've ever seen, which, again, for me personally, would include Mackenzie Gore and Dylan Lesko. I think those are like the three for me that are kind of separated from all the other high school pitchers I've seen from 2017 to now. How far off do you think guys like Gio Rojas or Carson Bulleman or Logan Schmidt or whoever maybe is your preferred top arm in this class from Seth Hernandez? Because I do think there is a different sort of tier still. Not saying that any of these guys can't come out this spring and maybe join that tier, but I think there is just a different level of power with the same sort of polish that you get from Bulleman. Like, I think Seth just had the complete package for me, whereas I think you could maybe nitpick a little from each of these other players and their profiles to maybe not quite put them in that elite, elite high school tier for me. But I'm curious if you see it differently.
Yeah, I'd still have Hernandez atop that group. Just the combination, just everything he does, and an elite changeup too, and a breaking ball that's good. It just kind of doesn't get as much attention because he was throwing 100 miles an hour in high school and had like a plus-plus changeup and pretty good athlete and explosive and powerful and, 6'4". just checked a lot of things that you were looking for. But yeah, I mean, all these other guys. And Coleman Borthwick, too. I didn't even mention him.
Yeah, we didn't mention before. Him, but he definitely fits.
Like, enormous human beings who are 6'6" and 250-plus pounds who also is a really good athlete and throws a ton of strikes and is into the mid-90s and has a good slider, if you like that.
If you like that. Yeah, the other one, I don't know if you mentioned, you typically do, but Joseph Contreras, I don't remember if you did.
Definitely
worth throwing his name out there because he could easily be a first-rounder, and he's got the Ben Badler splitter, so
that's a good one as well. Contreras, son of Jose Contreras, too. Obviously some big league bloodlines there. I mean, that's the other thing too, is like, you see guys throwing more pitch types now than you used to, which obviously, you're seeing in the major leagues, you're seeing throughout the minor leagues, the way teams are developing players now. Like, Travis Sikora in high school, like, throwing a splitter, Contreras throwing a splitter or forkball or whatever he's calling it. Obviously, I'm sure his dad had a lot of influence in that one. Guys throwing like kick changeups, other kinds of pitches, other things that they're learning through, through their coaches at these facilities. And also just like the strength and conditioning that these guys have access to, aside from the pitching specific coaching and instruction that they're getting. Like, guys were bigger, stronger, faster in 2018 than they were in 2008. And it's just going to continue to be that way. Like, I'm sure we'll be talking on this podcast in 2032 about like, wow, these guys are so much better than they were in 2025, right? In 2026.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of, as we're talking about this, I'm just curious, like, how the people who, like, always try to knock the current era and think that the era of their youth was the best, like, at what point do you get off the train and get on to that? Because I feel like it's very obvious to see it happening in real time here. So I'm not sure exactly how people get so wrapped up in, like, the nostalgia of their youth and locked into, like, what seems very obvious to a non-biased observer.
Yeah. Well, when you're a child, if it's a childhood thing, yeah. If when you were a child, I'm sure.
Sadly, I think a lot of it now has become better. former players.
I was going to say,
even worse than children, more embarrassing, I'd say.
Yeah. I think it's easy to get wrapped up too in that mindset of, okay, well, when I played, it was like this.
It's the best. Yeah.
This is how I learned things. even if you're not like a former player, it's easy to get wrapped up. Like just the older you get, like I can see it myself and I can feel it as I've been, I started Baseball America in 2007. Like hopefully I'm not doing things the same way. Yeah. That I was in 2010 or 2012 or 2022, that the lens that you're viewing through players and evaluating players and writing about players the same way, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, hopefully you have the perspective to zoom out and see the changes that are occurring and try to like stay on top of everything that's going on in the game in terms of the evolution of the game. Not that everything that changes is necessarily like a positive. Like I definitely think there are some things that tend to be faddish, almost like in like fitness, where it's like, oh, this is the flavor of the month. Everyone is doing Tai Bo or whatever. Like, no, like everybody's on their Peloton. Nope, not so much anymore.
Yeah.
I think there's things like that come and go in terms of like, oh, like which pitch type is in vogue right now. Oh, we want to get a lot of ground balls. Everybody should throw two seamers. Well, maybe not. Like, I don't know. Just not everybody's a cookie cutter. Right. Should take that kind of approach. So, but yeah, I think it's if you're not able to see how much better players are across the board today compared to, I mean, certainly like 20 years ago, but even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, I don't know. It's sad too when I see guys who are like, I don't know, younger than me, who are like 30, who you can, or even like in their like 20s sometimes, where you can already see that like bitterness come out, where it's like, oh, like back, these guys are doing things wrong. Like back in my day, we used to do this. And it's like,
yeah,
man, you're too young to be talking like that, bro.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we're going to have a lot more time to talk through these high school pitchers as we progress through the year. I'm sure there are going to be some guys who make some leaps up, maybe some names we haven't even talked about. We'll be talking about as potential first round guys. It seems like there are always a few names where that happens each season, but I wanted to at least broach the international topic with you today, Ben. Obviously,
yeah, players who are even less risky.
Yeah, let's go
17-year-old
exactly
international signings.
So that's coming up. I want to just kind of pick your brain. We are going to have another podcast prior to January 15th next week, where we'll get even more in depth on this topic and get you guys prepped and ready to go for signing day. But how are you feeling about the international class at this point today? Point people to the big board you have on the site. There's a lot of content that's going to be rolling out as we get closer and on that day. But yeah, just general thoughts on this year's class, maybe relative to other years, or any standout players or interesting players you want to talk through. Definitely wanted to hit on that at least briefly.
It's pretty solid. It's always hard to say, right? Because these guys are doing, you're going to have players who sign on January 15th who've had agreements to sign in place since, I mean, going back like 4 years in some cases. So obviously when you're reaching an agreement with a team, you stop going to like tryouts and workouts for other clubs. So other clubs are not really seeing you play anymore, right? Like, so you might have an area scout who goes to the field that the guy trains to see some other players in that program that they're looking at. And you might catch that guy taking some BP or taking some ground balls, or You know, maybe you happen to catch them in a game because, you know, these teams still want their players playing or their committed players playing in games to develop, because if you don't, it's hard to get better at baseball, especially at 13, 14, 15, 16 years old if you're not playing baseball games. So you might run into guys that way, but generally speaking, like, you know, you could call an international scouting director or you know, a supervisor in a country. Oh, what do you think of this guy who's signing with that team? Well, here's what I thought. Last time I saw him was 2 years ago, or I never saw that guy, which is like, you know, you would never say, there's no scouting director who'd be like, oh yeah, I never saw Seth Hernandez. I never saw that first round.
Saw Drew Burris. Yeah.
Yeah. It just doesn't happen. So it's always hard to say with a ton of certitude. Definitely feel like you get a much better sense of it by the end of the DSL season once you get these guys in games. But, you know, looking at it right now, I think there's some good players, certainly at the top of the class. I think Venezuela has a handful of pretty high-end talents this year. Obviously, you know, Luis Hernandez, the shortstop, who's going to be signing with the Giants. He'll be the top bonus player this year. I mean, again, barring some change from, you know, somebody gets a raise somewhere else, which is a little bit of a theme, I think, this year. I think I've heard this year more than ever a lot of altered deals where players or their agents are asking and a lot for more money from the teams that they have agreements with, if they've trended positively, and in some cases have gotten that money either from that team or from a different club.
Is there any reason why that's becoming more common this year?
I think part of it is, like, you know, these deals are being reached so early on,
right,
in the process. So, you know, you have a deal, and it could be for a guy who, you know, agreed for a lot of money. It could be $1 million or $2 million. It could be a smaller, you know, it could be $100,000 bonus guy where you're like, oh, now this pitcher went from throwing 86, 89 with, like, you know, a nice delivery, good curveball. Now he's 90, 94 and he's 16 years old and he's still got the same pitchability and all the other traits that you like, and it's like, oh, he's worth a lot more money than this. Like, hey, like, what can you do for us? And then teams have a lot more bonus pool money to spend than they used to before. So there are teams that say, all right, well, we have the bonus pool money, or there's another team that comes along and says, we have the bonus pool money. What or how locked into you into that deal,
right,
are you? And then I think there's also just, you know, a history of teams lowering bonuses for players or backing out of agreements that they have with players. So there's a lot of agents that are like, hey, man, I got to get paid. Like, you know, relationships are important, and that's one thing. But if these teams are going to do this, you know, to my other players, well, forget it. I'm going to do it back to them, even if it's not the same team. They might just have that same attitude. So somewhat understandable. And then I think, you know, you think back to last year, right, with Roki Sasaki and everything that was going on with him, where you had, like, at one point, I don't know, what, six, seven,
when I asked
eight
you this
teams?
Question initially, I was really wondering if, like, all the ripple effects from the Roki Sasaki hunt from every team, it was just like reaffirmed to agents that these teams really don't care, so they should just go get as much as they can. And this year they went full on for that.
Yeah, you had at least half a dozen teams that at one point thought they were in the mix for Sasaki who were telling, either were telling or weren't telling their players until very later in the process, like, well, you're going to have to hold because we have something as higher priority than you, even though we've had this deal in place for many years, which, you know, is not the international director making that call. That's the, you know, GM team president saying, no, if we can sign Roki Sasaki, like, you tell all these agents to you handle it. we're not it's not our primary concern here. So
right.
And then you saw, you know, like, the Dodgers ended up losing a few players, and Other teams came over the top and signed those guys for bigger money. Where it ended up working out for those players anyway, because they got paid more. Yeah. But yeah, I think all of that had some influence on that happening now. So I think it's, you know, you hear a lot about teams backing out of deals with players, and there's truth to that. I think obviously the teams hold a lot more power than the player side does, but it does work the other way. And it's not like totally new to this year, but I think I've been hearing about it more and more this year, of players actually getting paid more money that way.
Yeah. I feel like I ask you this every single year. We talk about the international signing day and the international class, but have you heard any more movement or rumblings on potential shakeups to the system, either tied to the upcoming CBA discussions or just general noise, maybe related to an international draft or just something to course correct for a lot of these issues in the market that we talk about every year?
The upcoming CBA, MLB is going to push for an international draft, just like they did in the CBA before that, and the CBA negotiation before that, and the CBA negotiation before that. And MLB is going to come out and say publicly about, or launder it through other people in the media, oh, we need this to slow down the process and for more competitive balance and transparency and blah, blah, blah. All right, you've had this system, like we wrote about this like over 10 years ago while this is going on. This is not new. You have to collectively bargain a draft with the union. So either it's important to the owners to get a draft and you give up more to the union in exchange to get that draft, which they don't want to do because the union doesn't really care about these amateur players, and MLB knows that, and it's this like weird negotiation of two sides that don't really represent the interest of international amateur players. Or have a plan B. All right, you didn't get a draft. What are you going to do to try to slow things down and have teams not reaching agreements with players who are 13 years old or 12 years old sometimes? I don't know. They don't seem to really do anything. So I'm sure they'll push again for an international draft. But if they wanted to do something about it, they could do something about it. They just choose not to.
It definitely doesn't seem to be at the top of their priority list by any means. But I just would, whatever the system is, it would be nice if we weren't talking about 14, 15 year olds, even younger than that, signing deals. And just the amount of uncertainty about the players themselves just feels like a bad process for everyone involved. Like, I would like to be able to just know more about all the players who were about to sign before they got into affiliated ball and start playing in the DSL. Like, it should be something that's a lot less of a mystery and a lot more excitement about like who the players are, like just more attention on these players from the public eye. Like, people clearly love prospects and want to get excited about the future. Some sort of tweaks to allow these players to get a little bit older before they're making these decisions. I don't know.
Generally the international scouts don't want the current system to continue either.
It seems no one wants the current system. We talked about it year after year after year.
Yeah, like there's I think generally they like the freedom to go out and compete on a somewhat even playing field. Like, the top bonus this year is $5 million. If any team has the bonus pool to give a guy $5 million. I mean, some teams obviously will be more going all in at that price point, but you can beat the competition to the punch on a player. You can do that internationally. You can't do we're in on Rock Chalowski or Grady Emerson, or you have no chance of signing that player in the draft if you're drafting fifth overall, or certainly 10th or 20th. All right, wait your turn and wait. Hopefully your guy is there, and then wait your turn again for another pick. Hopefully nobody takes the guy you like. Make your pick. So there's a lot more freedom that's great about the international signing process, but I don't know that anybody loves the idea of their job being predicting the future of what a 13-year-old player is going right. to be 10 years down the road when hopefully he's making his major league debut.
Well, in some ways, the fact that your job is based on that maybe seems kind of scary for your job security, because it's like, who knows? But at the same time, it does feel like international scouts have more job security and are more valuable in their specific avenue of player acquisition than any other scout, because you can't exactly scout them up on a TrackMan unit and with synergy and with stats or video at the international level at that age compared to college players. Like, if you wanted to have no scouts on the ground for any college games, you technically could have a lot of information about those college players you're taking. And so there is a lot more, seemingly, it seems like there's a lot more certainty. Like, you actually need to go have scouts on the ground looking at the players, evaluating them in person to make an informed decision on them in the international market.
And you can sign or agree to a deal with a player 365 days a year. So, like, especially yep. for pitching, I think you can, I think the quality of pitching and the state of pitching in the, especially in the Dominican Republic overall right now at like the minor league level and the amateur level is underwhelming to me, especially relative just how great the position prospects are. But there are like, there are some good arms still coming out of the Latin American, coming out of the Dominican Republic that you can find for, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $10,000. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're 16,
it's 17, like senior 18. Sign money in the draft. If you're just not as tuned into the international market,
because you're going out and you might not even go on to scout the pitcher that you end up signing or mm-hmm. reaching a deal with that day. You're going just to a tryout mainly to see some position players. Well, somebody's got to throw to them. So you bring in some tryout arm and you're like, hey, who's this guy with like a super fast arm touching, you know, 94, spinning a breaking ball. Like, let's, you know, sign him right here today or bring him back to our academy one day, get him in mm-hmm. our, you know, facility, get him on the TrackMan, get the data from him there, like see how it looks there. Like, just sign him right there. Like, and if you have good scouts who are out at the fields constantly seeing players and who know what they're looking at, who know to, hey, let's flag that guy and, like, you know, bring him, raise him up the ladder to, you know, to my boss and show him this guy. Like, that's how you can sign some great, great pitchers in mm-hmm. Latin America. It just doesn't, I mean, you can find good late round arms too, obviously in the States and non-drafted free agents, but it's just a lot more freedom to beat other teams to those mm-hmm. guys when you're working internationally.
Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts on international stuff before we wrap today? It's going to be maybe a little bit shorter than our typical episode, but we got a lot of planned content for you in the feed. So,
I can mention a handful of players too. Luis Hernandez, shortstop from Venezuela, going to sign with the Giants. You know, ask a lot of people like who's your favorite prospect for this year. He's a pretty popular answer. He mm-hmm. played in this like Venezuelan professional league. It's not the winter league there. It plays during the summer. You get like a lot of ex minor league players in there. So mm-hmm. Like a lot of like blast from the past names that you probably remember from like a 2017 prospect handbook or something like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And he went out and he hit 346 in that league. And like you watch his swing, like it's just like a really quality, sound, professional looking swing. I mean, he's not that big or he's not that tall, at least he's 5'10". But it's a very sound swing, really mature approach. Like he recognizes spin, makes a ton of contact. He squares it up for pretty hard contact too. Like he's not a huge power guy, but like I think, you know, you could end up seeing him in, you know, like a Gleyber Torres mold, like maybe hits 20, 25 plus home runs one year, like not a big runner, but plays pretty good defense where he is. Like, you know, does he stay at shortstop or not? I don't know. Maybe he just turned 17 a few weeks ago. So we'll see. But like overall, like he defends his position pretty well and like one of the higher confidence bats in this class. So like in Venezuela, you got, you know, a guy like him or and Jaibel Gomez, who's signing with the Royals, who I mean, he's really exciting to me, and also to a lot of people, I would say. just like,
you got the nice trending up tag on his name in your board.
Yeah. We try to throw that on some guys where it's like, you know, because we just list them in order of the expected signing bonus, which is not much.
Which every single year people misinterpret what the board is. So I'm excited for people to say, Ben Battler ranked this player as the X player in the class.
Yeah, not my preferred way of doing it, but it's just like, I feel like we do have like good reports.
It's the most transparent solution to what you described in terms of teams not scouting up these players for multiple years in many cases.
Yeah, I feel confident in the reports that we have on the players. It's just that like not as many, it's not like our draft process. And like, I don't know, if you see another talent ranking out there, like, I don't know, keep that in mind. But it's, yeah, I mean, Gomez is, I mean, I saw Gomez myself multiple times. He's from Venezuela, but he's been training in the Dominican Republic. So saw him multiple times there. Just, I don't know. I don't know whether to start with the offense or the defense with him. I'm not sure which one is better because he's a really good hitter. He's got a lot of bat speed. He's got a lot of power. It's translated in games. And both times I saw him, he probably made like four combined, like really good defensive plays in center field. Like he can fly. He's got a strong arm, like combination of like tools and skills and like physical. And
the body is incredible too. It looks like he's going to absolutely add a ton of mass and strength. Like it's super predictable. Yeah.
If you're
great video of him on the site too. So if you like a lot of these guys, yeah, you're not going to be able to see, but Ben has video on a number of the top players. And I'm just watching the video now as you're breaking him down, and it's really good stuff.
Yeah, he's really, really talented. Like, I imagine he's probably, I mean, just trying to think. Like, I liked Yandel Ricardo a lot when they signed him, but, like, this guy's ahead of him. He's going to they had a good signing class last year, obviously headlined by Kendry Churio, who's number two in their system right now, right-handed pitcher out of Venezuela. I think he'll probably be in our top 100. I think he should be in our top 100. But yeah, this guy's he's good, and he's gonna rank pretty high, I think, in the Royals farm system as soon as he signs. And then, you know, out of the Dominican Republic, you got Yohensi Colomé, who another guy where it's like you ask scouts, hey, who's your favorite guy this year? And he's a very popular name for that one, whether it's, you know, best player overall or best player in the Dominican Republic this year. Big league bloodlines. I mean, his dad is Jesus Colomé. His uncle is Alex Colomé, two former major league pitchers. Colomé, I mean, he has arm strength too, but he's definitely a hitter. I mean, it's like whippy, bat speed, impact, but also contact. Like he doesn't have to sell out his swing to get to that power. Mm-hmm. It's a really good looking right-handed bat with some physicality, like 6'2", pushing 6'3". I mean, that's like, these guys grow. Like you scout a guy and he's, you know, you might agree to a deal with a guy and he's 5'9", then he grows to 6'1", or he doesn't grow and you're like, oh, shoot, that's not what we were betting on. But yeah, with him, it's just like keeps ticking up, trending up. You know, Junior Caminero is like a popular comp for him, just like that kind of bat speed impact. I mean, Junior Caminero is a small dollar in signing, but like, so I'm not talking about the same age, but dreaming on like what everything could be if it all comes together. So I don't know, maybe shortstop, maybe third base, to be determined how that shakes out defensively and like who his future teammates are, how his own defense develops. But like certainly tools for left side of the infield with like a ton of offensive upside in terms of what I expect will be a very good hitter right away in the DSL to go with pretty big time thump and impact.
Nice. Yeah, there's some interesting names, some fun names, some exciting names to keep in mind. Ben, is there anything you want to plug in terms of like international coverage to be on the lookout for, or anything to point listeners to on the site if they just want to get more of what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, we got our top 50 bonus board on the site now. With reports and the signing teams for each player, we're going to expand that to 100 players next week. We'll have reports on every single team's signing class. Not just, you know, we'll obviously have the tracker updated throughout the day on January 15th with the names of each of the players that each team is. Has in their class, but we'll have scouting reports on the top guys for, and not just like some like the very, very top bonus guys, but you know, a lot of the main guys to know and some of the deeper cut guys to know from each class for all 30 teams as well.
It feels like every year there are a number of sleepers that you mention in these team write-ups that go out to the DSL and pop, and they later make a pretty sizable jump on team top 30. So get in early. Ben knows what he's talking about here.
Yeah, Kendry Cheerio obviously was a pretty good one for the Royals last year. So, it's later rising arms too. And and most teams too. Like, I think a lot of people are wondering about like the signings this year, especially from Venezuela, just given everything that has been going on since Saturday last week, or you know, even before then, but especially since then. But the players are all still like, they're going to be able to sign. It's not going to be like, you know, it's not like Cuba, like where we have like an embargo and the Cuban players have to leave the country to, you know, be eligible to sign with an MLB team. Like the players are all still on track to sign, and they just think like logistically when exactly they sign, where they sign. I think teams are still working through that right now. So usually what you see is, you know, on January 15th, there's a flood of signings happening that day. So you're still going to see that. And every team is going to have their academy in the Dominican Republic open. A couple of teams might do it, you know, their signing ceremony after January 15th, but you know, almost all of them are going to have their players, into their academy on the DR on the 15th for a signing ceremony with all their Dominican signings. And then a lot of teams are going to fly their Venezuelan players in beforehand so that they're at the DR academy in there for them to sign their contracts on the 15th. So, and some of the Venezuelan players have already been living in the DR too for years. So they'll be there as well. So I think like with that, like right now, teams are still figuring out things with like flights. I mean, it sounds like flights are still scheduled to leave out of the airports from Venezuela to get those players to the DR, and some of them have already left too, but there's just a lot of like volatility and uncertainty of like what might change over the next week. But there's a lot of teams too who are like, and they do this every year, where, you know, they'll have their Venezuelan players sign in Venezuela. Sometimes they get those players all together in one setting for a big signing ceremony, but it's also just like a much larger country geographically compared to the Dominican Republic, where in the DR, like, you know, you can drive anywhere within, you know, in the country within a few hours, even to like the more remote location. So Venezuela is more like, I don't know, combine like Texas and Louisiana, or like Florida, Georgia, Alabama, something like that. So you just have players who are spread out in a lot of different areas. So like the scouts who are in those regions in Venezuela or might handle those, you know, those signings for those players, or even just for one specific player. And so I think, look, like those signings are still on track to happen, barring something major changing next week. So you'll see a lot of them on the 15th, and then some more of them will still kind of trickle in the days, and in some cases weeks after, which is pretty normal for most years too.
Okay, cool. Well, there you go. That's the download from Ben on this year's international class. Again, we'll be back next week on the show to talk more international players, international prospects. So if you guys have any specific questions you want to throw our way for that in particular, if there's anything else you want to ask about or give us feedback for, please do that. There's information in the podcast show notes. Ben is at Ben Badler on socials. I'm at Carlos A. Colazo. You can email us, futureprojection@baseballamerica.com. But otherwise, thank you guys for listening. Thanks for supporting BA. Hope you all had good holidays. Hope you have a good new year. We're excited to be back on the show weekly moving forward, get into some baseball action here in a few weeks, and then I guess we'll all cross our fingers and think about Ben as he is pretty busy over the next week or so. But thank you for listening. For Ben, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.
From walking barefoot in the snow to hiking for miles for a view, it feels good to connect with our simpler side. Simplifying your wellness with Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake feels good too. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st when they go to Kachava, kachava.com, and use code NEWS.